Welcome to the second season of Operational Harmony, balancing business and mental well-being, where we achieve goals without sacrificing peace. Our host, Nikki, is the owner and founder of Nikki's Office, where she specializes in social media management, business audits, and business coaching. Her journey through mental health and entrepreneurship not only brings awareness, but also equips her with valuable coping skills. This unique experience offers a fresh perspective on approaching challenges and innovating in different ways. Let's introduce our guest.
Hi, I'm Carl Dakin, and I have my own consulting company, Dakin Capital. And I call myself the Capital Coach because I work with a lot of different groups, startup businesses, community projects, helping them find funding. I find myself as an intermediary between people who have money, who want to put that money to work, sometimes for just getting more money back or to address a social problem or cause, and those people who have innovations, those who are trying to bring a new product or service into the world, but they can't quite get it there without somebody else's money as added to the equation. What I try to do is act as a matchmaker to try to bring these two together. And I recently found a metaphor that I thought has been working well, where I referred to a middle school dance where the boys are on one side and the girls are on one side, the music's playing and nobody's coming to the middle floor to dance. So my goal, like the good school administrator, is to try to encourage both sides to come out onto the dance floor and work with each other. And sometimes that requires encouragement, sometimes incentives, whatever it takes, to see what we can do to make the world a little bit a better place with the innovations that are out there. And this is an ongoing process. So it takes time to develop credibility, to determine alignment of interest, and I try to make all that happen.
What is your favorite way to do that?
My favorite way is to take the opportunity, the business or community project, and to study it and then try to figure out who's going to benefit from that the most. So a lot of times you'll see entrepreneurs pitching anybody that moves for some funding, some money, but the only thing they have to offer is a return on investment, which turns out to be a single dimensional thing, and it makes them open to competition with everybody else. But if I can find somebody who has an additional benefit, they might be a supplier vendor to that entrepreneur where they're going to get to sell more products. It could be a reseller, a distributor, retailer who gets to sell more products or services. It could be a social cause or a local government. When we find those extra outcomes that give them that extra benefit, then we have more to talk about and we have a higher reason for them to work together to see if we can get something done.
So once you've connected the people, do you stay involved at all or to help with the next phase of getting it out to the people? Or are you not involved as soon as the A person meets the B person and they connect?
Yeah, I'm not a broker, so I don't stand in the middle and the investor looks to me and my reputation for what's going to happen. They have to look to the actual project, the opportunity. And in that regard, it's almost like you need a diplomat and a translator to help both sides learn to talk to each other at the level they want to talk to. But where I particularly specialize is that most opportunities are not ready for funding. They need to have some improvement or enhancement or addition or something. It may be a change of strategy or planning or management or go to market or something. And so I work to try to find out what that problem is to make it more fundable. I try to put that in place so I'm de-risking the opportunity to the investor. And essentially what I'm trying to do is when they're out on the dance floor, I'm trying to get them to approach each other where they're more on common ground and it's easier to get something done.
Oh, yeah. A techie talking to an executive is always a fun conversation to listen to.
A techie loves to talk about their invention, how it works. They'll go for a long time explaining the intricacies of what they're doing and how they're doing it better. So I found that the investor wants to talk about outcomes, which it gets back to their exit. How do they get their money back? What kind of benefits are they going to realize? And this is where the translator comes in. You have to take something that's technical, convert it to a business model, convert it to an outcome, and then with that point, we can have a conversation.
So do you have a favorite story that you like to tell?
I have lots of stories. We have stories that are humorous. We have stories that make you cry. We have stories in between where just when you think everything is going to work, something goes wrong and you go off the road and you don't know if you're ever going to get back on the road. Yeah, every day is a new adventure for me where I'm talking with someone, as an example, this morning about a patriotic film that they want to bring into the market next year in time for the 250th anniversary of the United States. It's a Revolutionary War hero, and we're talking about it, and they're telling me how great it is. I asked them the question. I said, what about everybody else who's bringing forward a revolutionary era film for next year? And he goes, I don't know of anybody else that's doing it. And I said, Ken Burns is just making an announcement of a whole suite of films. And then I started rattling off everybody I knew. And I'm not like the point person who knows everything that's going on in the industry, but I knew half a dozen other films, some on the Revolutionary War, some on Gettysburg, some on other things. And I said, what about those? And the guys just looked at me like, really?
He just kicked his puppy. That was never enough.
Yeah. And I have had, I remember one occasion I was explaining to someone what I thought they should be doing instead of what they told me they were going to do. The guy stopped me. He said, more about my business than I do. And I said, yeah. And that's unfortunately a very sad statement, because you need to be the world's expert on your own business. And in many cases, you may know everything in the world about the technology, but if you don't understand the markets and everything else that goes into the 360-degree view of a business, then you're not ready. And when you pitch to somebody with money, they're going to see that, and they're going to go, I'm going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, there's some people who can't listen to anything that's outside their beliefs.
I view it more as a competency issue, where I don't expect, to say, a quarterback for a football team necessarily to understand how to play safety or wide receiver or something. And they have their skill sets. And unfortunately, a lot of inventors, once they come up with the idea, they may have made their last valuable contribution to that concept. And it's important to get them to recognize that, to step out of the way and let other people with other skills, other experiences step up and do their best job to move it to market. And it's hard because it's their baby. One of my friends used to start off a story with, and of course, your baby may be ugly as a way of trying to get them to step back and take a more objective look at what they're doing.
Yeah. My sister sent me a picture of one of her babies and it looked like a troll. I was just, I don't know what you're doing. But it can't be mean. I have to say it's a beautiful baby.
Well, you hope they just grow out of it.
They did. They definitely did. But yeah, that baby looked like a troll and I'm sitting there going, okay, I have to say something nice. What do I say? Something nice. Ooh, this is hard.
Yeah, it's a happy baby.
Yeah. I think I said something along those lines. They look very happy. They have a very pretty smile.
Yeah, and that's a good starting point.
So, how do you find the people to put on the dance floor at the beginning?
Yeah, early in my career, I made a point of trying to be more visible, particularly with entrepreneurs and inventors. I got to meet a lot of opportunities by showing up and making short presentations through the SBA on topics of contracts and intellectual property management and so forth. And that same routine has followed me through 4.5 decades of doing this work, where I just keep it, trying to make myself visible to those who want my kind of a service. So I now do a daily newsletter Monday through Friday. I have my own live stream show that I do once a week. I offer to appear on podcasts like this one, where I get to meet new people and tell a little bit about what I'm doing. And then I'm a member of a number of small business, economic, and industrial groups who all have this shared vision. So I now get a regular stream of people coming in all the time, asking if I can be of help and raising them funding. And some I can, and some I can't, and some we still don't know.
So on the ones you still don't know, is that because they don't know what their offer is or what their product is? They're still trying to put that together, so you can't know what you're doing?
They sometimes somebody will come up with an idea to solve a particular problem, and it may appear to them to be the end-all answer to everything in the world, a panacea type solution. And yet it may turn out that their particular need that they are trying to address is not really one that aligns with the market, or maybe their market is small compared to a larger market that's somewhere else. And yet they have a hard time articulating what it is that they have, putting it into a value proposition that either the customer can understand, somebody in the supply chain, or an investor if they're standing outside and watching this objectively. And so when they come to me, sometimes even I, despite all the industries I've worked with, I'm like, I'm still not getting it. I'm still not seeing the great value that you're proposing here. Then we have to circle around, and we may beat it up for a while, going back and forth. Can it do this? Can it do that? To see if we can find something where it seems like there is a viable business enterprise that can be set up.
Okay. So when you're doing that, do you work with a clear leader all of the time, some of the time, or none of the time?
By clear leader, could you define that for me, Nikki?
The person who knows what they're doing on their side and can communicate at least what they're doing to you?
It depends upon the opportunity. That what we commonly see is you'll have somebody come up with an idea that we may call a creative or an inventor. And along the path, they may have picked up a partner who's a business person. If they haven't, then it's just a greater challenge to try to figure out what they've got and where it works. But even where I may think it's going to work, we still have to do some market testing, get some feedback to see if my guess on where to go to market is correct. And so there's a lot of different things that we may work on to test the market, do surveys, put prototypes or demos in front of people to get their feedback and see how they react. If they have a business person, that may generally improve the situation, but not always. The business person may be a little bit of a gatekeeper. They may themselves not have the experience. They may be a second cousin who's never done anything before except try to calm down the inventor to keep them focused on something. So it's a mixed bag, but if they get up into a full team where they're now talking a salesperson, maybe a CFO, now we're getting more professional, we're getting more in gear. They may already be in operation for 1 to 3 years. And that's where it's much easier to work with them, because now we're talking to an actual operating business that just needs to grow up.
So on the other side, the investors, the ones that are looking to spend money on stuff, do they always know what they want to spend money on? Or do they give you just, look, I want to be able to do this to a charitable type thing, or I want to do this for a business that is in this spot maybe? Or some of them just go, yeah, look, I got a lot of money and I need you to spend some of it so I don't have to pay that much in taxes.
Yeah, that's a great question, because all of us, including myself, early in my career, tended to think that people with money were intelligent, knowing what they wanted to do, had a clear sight of their where they wanted to go. And that is so far from the truth that I had to make major adjustments to the point where now when I encounter somebody who has money, who is talking about investment, I start at ground zero. And we ask them, what is your goal? And often it's a vague and ambiguous response. And then we say, what are the jokes I tell? Is I ask them what they did last weekend. And they look at me funny and they go, one group will tell you they were out on their speedboat and they're racing around the lake all weekend. I go, okay, I'm going to put you in category over here. And the other one goes, no, I was working down at the soup kitchen. I was ladling soup out to the homeless. I go, okay, I'm going to put you in a different group over here. But for the most part, they have a very vague, but I'll know it when I see it, which is very hard to work with. And so you get out your flashcards and you throw up a card. Does this look right? Does this look right? Does this look right? And they may zero in on something. Then you have to ask them even more questions. Some people have hired professionals to help them, wealth managers, accountants, attorneys. Unfortunately, these people, although they're good people and they're very knowledgeable in their subject, they may not be able to look at something that's not ready for funding, which is where we find ourselves a lot of time, where the guy says, hey, I really this deal. I go, the deal's not ready for funding. And they go, yeah, but it looks good. I go, yeah, but they don't have a good management team, or they haven't thought through their sales program, or they've got 200 competitors. People come to me all the time with a new sports drink or vitamin drink or new drink. And I'm going, how are you going to carve out a position, a market that's so already overcrowded with a dozen coming in every week or month to this marketplace? And they're like, my stuff is so good, I don't have to worry about that. And that leads to the problem of people overthinking the value of their deal. Sometimes it's naivete, sometimes it's arrogance, more often it's arrogance that, oh, my deal's so good, I don't have to worry about it. Everybody's going to beat a path to my door. And it doesn't work that way.
I could see that. Some people get their money because somebody else made it and they inherited it. So they come to the table just like me and are like, okay, they said I need to spend some money.
And if somebody has a big pot of money, and I've been fortunate to be introduced to some ultra high net worth people over the last several months, and you realize that it's actually a great challenge for them to put their money to work in a way that won't lose their money, that's going to make them feel good and so forth. And in fact, what a lot of these people, and it's hard to understand from somebody who has no money, but these people can afford anything that's off the shelf. So if they can go to the local store, dial a broker, they can buy it because they can afford it. So what do you buy for the guy or gal who has everything? That really becomes the question. And so at that point, then we're saying, I can try to find something unique. I can try to find something that's an immersive experience, something that you can talk about to your friends. And this ends up being a very narrow type of niche to find that. So a new technology or innovation may fit all of these criteria that go, look, I'm supporting this new cure for cancer. Everybody's going to feel good about themselves. They may make some money off of it, and it's all good. But if you walk in and go, I want to show you a new car wash, that may not get out of bed in the morning, and it may not get the funding you're looking for. We're providing services to investors that kind of help them look at deals, put their toe in the water without a whole lot of money investment, but still get closer to the other side of talking to the people with the ideas, where they can see if this is really meaningful, if it's viable, if they feel good about it, and whether they want to back it or not.
It sounds like a circus.
A multi-ring circus would be a good description. We have clowns over here. We have the lions over here. We have somebody playing the band, maybe so loud you can't hear yourself talk. That sounds pretty much like every day.
Yeah.
I think that it's very good for us to have a marketplace where people can come together with new ideas basically what we talk about, an entrepreneur is not a person who sees a glass as half full or half empty, but it's the wrong size glass. And in that regard, entrepreneurs get up every morning going, this could be better. There was once actually a survey in Forbes magazine on whether you were an entrepreneur or not. And it was pretty hilarious because they had all these strange questions. And I was trying to take this thing as myself as an entrepreneur. And the 20th question was, could you design this survey form better? And I checked the box yes and realized the whole thing was a joke because every entrepreneur would check that same box the way I did. Yeah. Saying, of course I can make it better. That's my whole purpose in life. And so I think it's good to have people out there willing to go at risk, willing to put blood, sweat, and tears into bringing new stuff to market. It's unfortunate that most of them don't know how to do that and don't have the business skill or experience or maybe just outright talent to make that happen. But that's what makes for the circus. So we're constantly trying to make the world a better place, but you have to go through all these hoops. You have to play by certain rules, whether you want to or not, to bring things to market. And if you do, though, you can make a living. You might get rich, but we try to avoid that as an outcome because it's not as likely as people would want it to be. And along the way, every product or service they bring to market may enrich somebody's lives somewhere, may save lives, may make things ever so much better.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for sticking with us. Before we dive into our next topic, I just want to take a quick moment to remind you to like this video, subscribe to our channel, and hit that notification bell. That way, you'll always be the first to know when a new episode drops. And we want to hear from you. What topics are you most excited about? Drop your thoughts in the comments below. Your feedback helps us create content that you love. We've got some exciting stuff coming your way, so don't miss out. Now, let's switch gears and jump into our next discussion.
We're going to talk about different ways to get help with your mental health if you do not have insurance, because it is my philosophy that everybody needs to be in therapy, even if you're normal, right? Even if you don't have any mental health issues, because there are some stuff that's just hard to deal with. Even if you think you're dealing with it, you may not be. Could be causing ulcers in your stomach. How many people do that? So therapy helps people. It changes lives, and it changes you usually for the better if you have a good therapist. Now, not talking about the therapists that screw their clients in multiple ways or the therapists who are just bad therapists. I'm talking about good therapists or after being diagnosed with something, getting the medicine that you need to actually be stable, because being crazy is only fun if you're talking about somebody else, not yourself or not something you've done. Bottom tier for mental health, you have the community mental health people. So when I was in Tennessee, they had a community thing that was a three counties went to this one mental health building. I gotta say, you have to have some patience if you're going to do that, and if you need to do that, do it anyway. I mean, if you don't have the patience, just don't act like a fool because they can't arrest you. But they were constantly late, running behind. So if you had a 15-minute appointment at 3, you might still be sitting there at 6. So there are drawbacks to doing the community mental health. But if you need mental health care and that's the only option available because of the cost of mental health, then do that. Because always better to be on your meds and taking them properly than it is to be off them. Usually those community places also have either inside them a 3-day stay, or they can connect you to where the 3-day stay is in your area. 3-day stays don't have to be, oh, I want to leave this earth. It could be that you just moved into a state and you have to figure out where all the services are, because nobody's going to fill your prescriptions all of a sudden. Being in a 3-day stay, you'll get prescriptions that will last you in that area until you can get switched over. Because what I found when I moved from like Maryland to Texas or Texas to Maryland, I got a prescription. I got a paper prescription to be sure that it could be covered, but the pharmacy didn't want to cover it because it wasn't from a Texas pharmacy or it wasn't from an Arkansas pharmacy or doctor. I ended up off my meds for a while, and that was very dangerous for me in multiple ways. I have psoriasis. I'm on shots to be clear from psoriasis because I am not clear like this without a shot. And that little screw up between Maryland and Texas meant that I went back to 85% covered and massively inflamed. So going without my meds is not an option. We finally got me back. And when we moved from Texas to Arkansas, we did it so much better and so much faster to make sure that I was going to be fine with the medicine transfers and stuff, because it was bad. So I know currently with my current therapist, if there is a day where I can't go into therapy because I'm not feeling good and I don't want to get her sick, or my ride is in another state for the day or the week, I know that I can text her and she'll be like, do you want to do telehealth? And so we'll do that. It's a secure platform where you can talk to your therapist. One of my biggest pieces of advice for somebody who has mental health, when you move into an area, search mental health in my area, right? Easiest little search thing there is. And it'll pop up a whole bunch of different options. Pick one at random. It could be the first one. It could be the middle one. I don't care. Any, meeny, miny, mo it. Call them and be like, I am switching over this type of insurance, or I don't have any insurance, but I need help figuring out where to go to get started to get mental health help. Every single one of the places near you will help you do that, as long as they just haven't dealt with somebody who's trying to come through the window. They might be a bit testy some days, but usually if you can get a hold of a person on those lines, they will help you. The first place doesn't actually have a person you can talk to because it does one of those things where you scroll through, okay, hit number one for this, number two for that, and then it never actually gets to a point where you can talk to somebody. It's just leave a message, call a different place. You might get a different option. Some therapists do a sliding scale to make it more affordable. That one depends on how much they're dependent on insurance money, because insurance won't let them charge more for people on insurance than they do for the people off insurance. So that's that. The last option, and I would not recommend it, really would not recommend it, are free clinics. And there's a reason why I don't recommend them for mental health. If you have a health emergency and you need to go to a free clinic, go to a free clinic. Totally worth it. But for your mental health, free clinics and mental health don't usually go well together. You may end up stuck somewhere that you didn't intend to be because you were in an emergency situation. So I don't really recommend that. I know that in my therapist office sometimes has interns, and I think if you're not on insurance and you allow an intern to go into the meeting with you, there might be a bonus so that you get so much off of your visit for letting them be in there with you. You've got NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It has a hotline, which I will have down below in the little gold part, so that if you are having one of those bad days where you've spiraled out and your mental health is in a crisis mode, call them and they will have somebody who can help you start to come out of that spiral. The biggest thing, if you are in a humongous spiral and you feel like you may do something stupid, there's always the emergency room, because Nobody wants anybody to do anything stupid. So for me, my philosophy on mental health being that if you have a problem, you need to work on it. And you need to make sure you know who you are and how you react to things. And you get that help by having a therapist. I have two of them. There's nothing to be ashamed of by having a therapist. Do you have anything to add?
I was just going to ask, you're talking about therapists in a consultative role. Do you recommend working with groups like Alcoholics Anonymous or other group type sessions as opposed to hiring a professional?
My personal opinion is I don't feel that groups work as much as people think that they do, because everybody's trying to one up the next one. Oh, if they've been sober for 30 days and I have to do it for 60 days, which I guess can be good, right? Because now you're being sober, but you're being competitive in a situation that isn't a competition with other people. It's a competition with yourself. And I have been forced in group situations by minimizing things that I've gone through to help somebody else. And group situations for me are sketchy. But if it's something that actually works for you and that you will stick with and get the help you need from that, then sure, go. They can help. There's Alcoholics Anonymous. There's Anon, which is for siblings and parents of people who are alcoholics. There is there's Addicts Anonymous, where they are addicted to different substances and are trying to get clean.
Yeah, we've often joked that maybe there should be an Entrepreneurs Anonymous program for entrepreneurs who maybe weren't cut out of the right cloth to be their own self-employed business person. But do you also recommend using any of the online matching services to find a therapist?
I would do some research on them. If we remember a couple years ago, everybody and their brother was talking about, I think it was BetterHelp. And they ended up having really bad problems with keeping their client list protected, even though that's a HIPAA thing to have. And because they were partnered with influencers, there was a bunch of backlash for that. So make sure that you're looking into any app or whatever that says that they match you with the therapist to make sure that their list is something that is HIPAA approved, and make sure that once you're in it, always, if you're talking to someone and you don't feel safe, that's time to get a different therapist. Or even if you just don't like somebody. I was told I had a therapist. I talked to her for one time. She's one of those people who had her nose up in the air the whole time we were talking. And I was just like, I ain't talking to this person ever again. And I walked out and walked up to the counter and was like, no. So getting a new therapist, you might have to jump through a hoop or two, because sometimes management wants to know why you don't like the therapist. They usually don't appreciate it very much when your answer is because they're just stuck up somebody's butt. But be as honest as you can be, because it's necessary. Feedback, and then go to the new therapist and keep on trucking.
Yeah, I saw a pitch a couple months ago for an AI, artificial intelligence assisted, for people who had suffered abuse. And the immediate response in seeing what they were doing was that they were not protecting any of the conversations, which meant that if there were later legal issues, the entire conversation would be fully discoverable in whatever was going to happen. And it would also look like it could potentially be viewed by others, which would open the door to all kinds of other problems.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, to be careful about making sure that your person has that list. And also, please don't talk to AI. Okay, look. We talk to AI all day for our jobs, some of us anyway. I know I do, for different things that I use AI for. There is no way in anybody's mind that I'm going to start typing to AI, look, this is the mental health stuff I've been dealing with my entire life. What do you think about it? Because dude ain't going to know nothing. That's not protected.
Beyond that, AI is not a live person. It's not even a digital sentient being. What it's giving you, and I deal with this all the time, is it's giving you consensus information, which is like the average of averages of information. And you as an individual, no matter how much your situation may mirror other people, you're still unique and you need a unique treatment or assistance or support. AI can't give you that. At the most, it might help you find a therapist, but after some point, it's not going to do you any good.
Yeah, no, I don't recommend telling AI your deepest, most innermost thoughts, because AI, first of all, cannot tell if your dark innermost thought is a dark humor joke or if it is something you're actually going to do. Because I tell people all day long that I want to throat punch somebody else. I have never actually done it, would never actually do it. And it's just one of those release valve things when I'm frustrated. thing. But like, AI wouldn't know that. AI gonna call the cops on me.
Yeah. There's a lot about expressing your emotions. And when I was growing up, we tended to use all kinds of things, statements like, I'll kill you, I'll smash you, I'll do something, which are all politically incorrect today. Plus, I don't know if they have any more meaning than they did when I was younger, but people don't like to hear that. And yes, an AI cannot interpret. And as an entrepreneur, I often preach that every entrepreneur should embrace dark humor as a way to survive being an entrepreneur. And some of the dark humor can get very dark.
Yeah. It's
a good way to express oneself, but as you said, it doesn't necessarily translate to taking a improper action against somebody. And an AI would not necessarily be able to tell the difference. And whatever action they took might not be the right one. So it's all kinds of issues with AI today. There's limits on what it can do and where it can help. And this is one where I would err on the side of caution to say, other than getting directions to the local pharmacy or the local therapist, I think about as far as what you want to push it.
Also, my therapist doesn't take notes during my sessions. I prefer that they don't take notes, because if they have a lot, she could take some notes afterwards, obviously, and she probably does so that she could remember something that happened that day in case it's asked later. But they're not specific enough things that it could catch me up later, because no recordings of my because like I said, I will say I'm going to throat punch somebody. I am not actually going to throat punch somebody. And if anybody got the, and my therapist knows my humor, so there are plenty of other things that I say during a therapy session that probably wouldn't be okay in a lot of other situations. Not only that, but my personal information, my story of who I am and how I got to be the way I am, is not for people to listen to who have not talked to me and know me and understand, you know, me now. And then they listen to that. No, thank you. No recordings of me. But I'll let an intern in the room every single time, because I don't care. Sure, you want to come in the room? You're about to learn. And if I'm on a rare day, I'm like, don't ever do this. Don't do that. But know yourself. Know what you're comfortable with. Because I know I am not having therapy with a dude. Not going to happen. I am not getting closed into a room with a dude for an hour. Nope. No, thank you. That doesn't make me feel safe. On the other hand, some people may go, I'm not getting stuck in a room with a female for an hour. That doesn't make me feel safe. So make sure you know yourself in that regard so that you know whether to ask for a female or a male, because it matters. And if you're okay with a dude, ask for a dude, because there are way too many people who are only okay with a female. So there are very few male therapists that actually survive.
I think that gets to the point that you want good quality, but you also need to feel comfortable. If you're not feeling safe, then the therapy is probably not going to be nearly as effective as you want it to be.
Because you have to, when you're in therapy, look, I have had joking conversations with some people around me who don't understand what it is to be depressed, who don't understand what it is to go and work with a therapist. Joking conversations where they're like, if you need help with your therapist today, call me. And I can joke with them. That's fine. But when you're in that office and you're talking with that, usually it's not fun. Every once in a while, if it's your birthday, because I know this year it's going to be my birthday one of the times I go. Why not? You can have just a general conversation. But a lot of the times you're going, look, I'm having a really bad couple of days. And either A, I don't remember, I don't know why. There's no situation happening right now. I should be fine, but I'm not. So what's going on? And then you start trailing back. Okay, so what in your past has happened during this point in time? Oh, you got told you were moving to another state and it was your fault and everybody was mad at you. Maybe that's why your body remembers trauma. It will pull that crap out of nowhere long after you're like, oh yeah, I'm over it. It's a fun thing some days. To be like stressing over something that you didn't even remember until you were going, okay, let's go back. Eeny, meeny, miny. Mo did it this time.
Yeah, it's always interesting how a memory of something that's in the far past that has almost no chance of repeating itself can still influence how you see something today. I was in a discussion with a group last week where they were doing a survey of investment profiles. And one of the questions was, if you had a really bad investment in the past, is that going to influence your decision in the future? And I said, absolutely. Even though that particular investment may be non-repeatable, it may be something that was just a weird place in time or a weird market change or any number of things. And yet it makes up part of who you are. And it's going to influence how you make decisions going forward, for good or for bad.
Yeah. And not only that, but 20 years from that time, you could be having a normal Tuesday and all of a sudden you have an anxiety attack because why the crap not? It's just that time of year again. And for some reason this time I'm having a heart failure because I had an investment that failed 20 years. That's what gets me. It's not so much that there are some days that I have that are bad that I know for a fact are going to be bad because they're bad, right? What gets me are those random Tuesdays when all of a sudden my anxiety hits the roof and I'm like, what the crap is this? Everything's fine. I'm working on all my stuff. I'm not behind on anything. I'm doing really good. Why am I all of a sudden about to have the biggest panic attack that I've had in a couple of years? And then you talk with somebody and you talk and it takes a minute, right? It's not, oh yeah, that's what it is. No, it takes a minute of kind of having a conversation and then going, oh, this is March. 23rd, I don't even know how long ago it was. We moved from Boston to Maryland, and my mom told me it was my fault. We were moving because of me, and I didn't even want to move. So it just made the move stupid. And now, just on a random day in March, my heart palpitations started, and I'm like, circle around, and it's because of that.
Like, yeah, it's kind of like a confluence of the planets. When they all line up, strange things may happen, or as you say, it triggers a memory. And we all remember the first this or the first that, and that's a good thing, but it can also remind you of bad things. And then when you least expect it, as you say, it pops up and you're going, why am I not on track today? Why am I running off the rails? I can't focus, can't get moving. And as you say, then you kind of work backwards, reverse engineer your day. You're going, oh, that happened and that happened. That's a rare configuration. And it really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Your anxiety, like, yes, it does. Yeah. I have to do this. I have to be. Blah, 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 blah. I don't know if you've seen it, but they have that movie El Canto, where the Spanish house that is magical or something. But one of the people in this movie, they give him kids. Okay, one of the kids. If he gets a hold of coffee, he does it, blah, 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 and then he can do super fast stuff. And some days, my anxiety does that. I don't drink coffee because that's disgusting. Caffeine doesn't affect me like that. But all of a sudden, I'll just be sitting here, and all of a sudden, my anxiety is off and running. And I'm just sitting here going, I was calm a second ago. I didn't even talk to anybody. What the crap is this? What are you doing? So... we all have days, we all have moments, and that's where I'm like, have a therapist. You don't have to go to the therapist every week like I do. I have a whole lot of crap I have to deal with, right? So I go once a week. You may need to go once a month to just check in and make sure that the situations you have gone through aren't marking you in a way that is permanent.
Right.
Or maybe once every couple months to make sure the things that you're doing or whatever. Or so that you have that lifeline of reaching out and saying, hey, I need a telehealth appointment with you because I don't know why, but today I'm not okay. And then you do that. And you figure out why you're spazzing and you fix it. So that's why I think everybody should have one. Because I think everybody has those moments where they're like, my anxiety off to the race without me, and I don't understand what's happening. Or you just get slapped in the face by a divorce.
Yeah,
life changes. Everything changes. I hate change. I am the first one to tell you I hate change. I will put it off as much as I have to because I hate it. When it comes to personal life choices in business, I can deal with change all day long. I could deal with a lot of things in business that I cannot deal with in my personal life at all. It is a weird thing. I know it's weird. I can't understand it. I can't explain it. Like, just let it go. But like, my personal life can be a hot mess and my business life is still perfectly fine because I am like, no, I have to hold the line or everything's going to fall apart. And that wouldn't be good. Everybody has that, though.
Yeah. Do you see that business is, you can deal with more change because you feel like you're more in control, that you're the, I would call it the actor or the proactive person that is making the change. So you feel like, I mean, I got this. Where on the other side, your personal life, you may feel like you're trying to hold on to stuff and everybody else is in control and you're just reactive. And then to me, that would be my guess as a non-therapist that, yeah, there's things people go, how can you enter into that business deal? And I go, I understand all the risk. I know where all the players are. I know where everything's at. And they're going like, that is crazy. I can't believe anybody would do it. And I go, no, it's not. It'd be like walking a tightrope between two high-rise buildings. I could never do that. But the guys who do the tightrope, they go, yeah, it's no big deal. As long as the wind's not gusting, I can make this happen all day long.
Yeah.
But you get to a point where you're going like, I'm not in control of anything. That is a scary position to feel like you're sitting there just taking the punches and hoping everything turns out okay. That's no fun at all.
No. And it's not a place you need to be in. There is help. There are people out there that can help. Because a lot of times when somebody all of a sudden goes through something, let's say you have a normal life. Your life has always been normal. Your parents were together and whatever. Everything was normal. And then your wife cheats on you. And you have to go through a divorce. Before you do anything stupid, such as hurting somebody else or yourself, go talk to a therapist, work through it, get the anger out, punch a wall. Punching walls is way more appropriate than punching people, so punch a wall. Get your anger out. Go lift weights or something. I don't know your health. Go do something. And then once you've gotten it all worked out in your head, you're in a way better spot and you're not going to do the stupid.
Yeah, no, it's better to be in a calm place with making decisions than feeling like you have to make an emergency reaction to something. Because you tend to make poor choices and you feel like you have less choices to make, which contributes to making poor choices.
Yes, exactly.
I like to keep my options open. And when we put deals together, I say, what's your plan B? And most entrepreneurs don't have one. I go, not only plan B, but you have a C, D, E, and F plan. Because the world may not cooperate the way you want it to. And if I have a number of layers of reactions based upon what hits me, then I feel like I'm more in control because I'm already thinking forward and thinking around and either avoiding or mitigating the downside. And it seems a little bit like I'm getting so many steps into a chess game where I go, okay, I've thought through most of this. We've narrowed down everything to stuff short of terrorism, which on 9/11 caused all kinds of anguish because we had not anticipated that as a potential cause of business failure. And we were in a little bit of a panic mode for over a week, not to mention we couldn't fly anywhere. As we were trying to go, how's this going to work? How's people going to react to this? Good, bad, or indifferent? And are we liable because we didn't tell investors that terrorists might come in and blow up some buildings and kill a bunch of people? There will be things, whether it's a natural disaster or things out of the blue or some things that might be a little bit predictable, but nonetheless, you didn't expect it. And those surprises, those are hard for everybody.
Okay. So I think we're good for today. Thank you very much for joining me on my podcast.
Yeah, a little bit. In terms of mental health and entrepreneurship and funding, which is a subset of entrepreneurship, we talk about balancing life between your work life and your personal life. And I have found that the word balance is often misleading. And some of the people that I follow actually to describe, you should make your personal life a friendly competitor with your business life. They should each have their own goals, their own business plan or equivalent of that. You should dedicate resources to both, like, again, an internal friendly competition so that both sides get a fair shake. Both sides have a fair day in the debate over what you're going to do today. And that means that your personal life won't get lost or subsumed into your business life.
Yep. Yeah, everybody is forever telling me, oh, you have to balance your work life and your business. I'm like, yeah, no, my business takes up a bunch, but I still take my time for my personal. It's just not a 50-50 split. And it doesn't have to be all the time, especially entrepreneurs. You have so much to do, but make sure you still are paying attention to yourself. And I know when I'm at the point where I want to punch somebody in the throat or whatever. And so I know I have to step away and I go play World of Warcraft and heal people because DPS is not my thing. I go and I heal and it's fine. And so if you don't have something that you can take a break, step away, go do something else, maybe for an hour, maybe for the night, and then come back, that's something you need to have. And if it is gaming that you like to do, please stop marrying people who don't like gamers. Good gravy.
Yeah, there is a bit of compatibility that has to be dealt with. A little bit of differences, I think, is good. It creates some tension from time to time. But again, the word balance may be the wrong word to use. Something to deal with recognition and respect of the other person, of the other things you're doing, give it that equal merit. I will let everybody get to a better place.
Okay. like I said, thank you very much for being on my podcast, and I hope that you have a great rest of the day.
Thank you, Nikki. Thanks for letting me be a guest on your podcast. I enjoy the opportunity to have conversations like this. It's sometimes fun to see where they go and where we end up.